Okay, so you've heard about automation this morning in theory, and now you're going to hear about automation in practice from Scott Stagg.
So, as Ron said, I'm going to tell you about the practical aspects of applying the automated EM pipeline using Legendon. Another way to look at that is, what are you going to do with all those data that you're going to collect? And what I'm going to focus on are, what are the steps one takes to use the automated pipeline, and of course, what are the obstacles that you're going to encounter along the way to a reconstruction. You've already heard from Clint and Bridget about the reconstruction pipeline. It has these steps, and in data acquisition, we use the software Legendon particle picking. Here in the AMI group, we use the software Selexon. We estimate the CTF with ACE, and all these software interact with our database, and so that we can query it to select good data, maybe, with these database queries, or whatever else you can imagine, and end up with a reconstruction. The specimen that we've used most recently for testing the pipeline is GrowEL, and it's been our driver for developing both automated data collection and automated data analysis. We collected 150,000 particles of GrowEL in 24 hours, about a year ago, and so that was a big technical accomplishment, but that led to these questions. How do we assess this data? What else can we do? And that led to the development of several new developments. We developed some environment monitoring for the microscope, new database reports to query the quality of the micrographs. This served as a training data set for ACE, the CTF estimation program, and helped us optimize protocols for single particle reconstruction with EMAN and FreeAlign. And we're having this problem with our grids, where the ice was really thick at the edges and all the GrowEL was packed up against the edges. And so we were able to really characterize that with this data set, and that led to the development of new grids that were called jacks and now are called C-flats? Is that C-flats? And I'm sure Joel would love to tell you about those. So the first step in the pipeline is data acquisition. And you already know we do that with Legendon, and the key part of that is it's automated microscope control. And so you don't have to sit in the cold, dark microscope room. You can sit in a remote location, drive the microscope. And what Legendon does is this multi-scale imaging, where you select targets and work your way up in magnification, selecting smaller and smaller area until ultimately you focus and acquire a high resolution micrograph of your specimen. So what does that take in practice? Setup of Legendon takes about an hour on a good day to about 5 hours on a bad day. And so what's the difference there? Bad days are usually happen when there's some problem with the stability of the microscope, or problems with the specimen, the problems with ice, so on. And we're lately having more good days than bad days, so that's a good thing. And after you've set it up, you start the automated acquisition. The first step is to create the so-called atlas, which is a tiled image of many low mag images. And the next step is to go up in mag and acquire the square image and find the holes. That takes about 30 seconds for a square image. You know, this is all automated, but the automation takes about 30 seconds to find the holes, and about a second for this whole image. Then we focus, And that takes about 10 seconds for the algorithm to do its business, and plus an additional 5 to 10 seconds to melt the ice, because we're focusing on this stretch of carbon here that's covered in ice. So you have to, depending on the thickness, you have to melt for a longer time. And finally, we read and correct the high-resolution exposures, and that takes about 30 seconds per exposure. So image collection statistics for a typical 24-hour session. We can typically collect about 500 defocus pairs. We usually do this at about 50,000x, which is about 2.3 angstroms per pixel. We often do a range of defocus, and typically, well, for GROWiL, we get hundreds of particles per image. We focus the microscope about 300 times in this session, and we do that at the same magnification as the exposure images. We visited about 318 holes with 5,000x magnification, and we use a really high defocus there so we can actually get enough contrast to find the holes. 32 squares, and once again we use really high defocus so we can find those holes, the holes on the squares. And for this session we went for 25 hours. The next step in the pipeline is picking particles. And as I said before, we use this software called Selexon. And here's GROWiL. The little red dots are particles that it's picked. It also has an algorithm for eliminating bad regions of the exposure, like cruddy ice or whatever. And that's what these lines are. That's regions it's identified as being bad. So it throws those particles away. And that way you get a much higher accuracy for your picking. And in the case of GROWiL, we get about 95% accurate. Now, GROWiL is a very well-behaved specimen, so we get this high accuracy. And the session that I'm going to talk about, we collected around 280,000 particles of GROWiL and 24 hours of data collection and 24 hours of picking. How long does this step take? Well, the setup takes about 1 to 2 hours, and that's mostly because you have to develop templates for picking your particles. What we typically do is go through our first few high magnification images and manually pick particles, then do some sort of reference-free alignment on them to generate some class averages, and then use those as templates for the automated picking. So once you get your template set up, there are some additional parameters that need to be set, like how to decide what's good or bad ice and so forth. And that takes about 30 minutes to optimize those parameters. And then you press go and do the automated particle picking. And that, while it's doing the processing, it takes about 2 minutes per micrograph. Next step in the pipeline is CTF estimation. And as you heard, we use ACE. Bridget went over this in detail. And all I want to say about this is after it estimates the CTF, it records a correlation coefficient. So some sort of parameter that tells you how well its estimation fits with the actual data, and we can use that in our automation. So we can say throw out all the micrographs below a certain threshold for the ACE's automation estimation. Now those might very well be good micrographs, but we're collecting so much data that we can afford to throw away things that are even if they're good. A recent development is a program called AceMan. And that arose because, yes?
Excuse me. Concerning the CTF determination, do you determine the CTF only for the whole micrograph, or are you determining the CTF for each image on the micrograph?
That's a great question. I meant to say that with ACE, the CTF is estimated on the whole micrograph. So you take the whole micrograph, split it up into the smaller chunks, average those together,
yes,
and develop the 2D profile.
Once you've done that, according to the coordinates of your image, don't you determine the CTF estimated for one image at this position in the micrograph?
Well, that's exactly what we wanted to do with this ACE man. So, as she pointed out, one of the problems with ACE was that it does the estimation on the entire micrograph, and many times people want to do their CTF estimation just on the particles. So, working with Satya Malik, who developed ACE, we got him to modify it so that it would ACE would read imagic stacks. So this is just the particles on the images instead of the entire micrographs. And we had to get him to modify his formulation of the noise and the envelope so that it's more agrees with E-man, then do the full CTF estimation with noise and envelope for particle stacks. And so far this doesn't include structure factors, but that's something that we're working on. It should be implemented within a month. And here's just a typical example of the estimate it comes up with. So at first it estimates the noise and subtracts that off, and that's this picture. Then it estimates the envelope and divides that out. And so this would be like the corrected CTF, or the pure CTF. And then he estimates the defocus and then refines it. And so you see here that the green dotted line matches very closely with the blue continuous line, which is the actual data. So how long does this take? Setup for ACE is extremely easy. It takes about 1 minute, and basically all you're doing is pointing it at your data, and there are other parameters that can be adjusted, but in practice we found that the defaults work, and you just press go, and so then it automatically estimates the CTF. And while it's running, it takes about a minute per micrograph to do its estimation. And since it's not reading entire micrographs with this ACE man, it's slightly faster when we run it in that mode. So as I said before, all these links in the pipeline interact with the database, and I just want to give you a feel for what that looks like. The statistics for a particular session are summarized in these database reports. So this gives you information about every aspect of the data collection. So this is the session that we're using. It tells you when you began and ended, and the duration of the experiment, what microscope you're on, who's doing the data collection. Here's statistics on the images we acquired. And while Legendon is running, we record things about how the data is being collected, and one of those things is drift. And drift is recorded in the database, and so then we can query the database for reports on how that drift how the microscope behaves throughout the experiment. So you can see here's our drift over time, and there's a huge peak there, so we want to eliminate that to get an idea of what the drift looked like for the rest of the micrographs. So here's our drift over time. Here's a histogram of the drift, and so this is in pixels per second. You can figure out how what that is in angstroms per second, and that's something we need to implement actually. So you can get an idea of how much your drift, your stage was drifting during the course of your experiment. And in this case, this table reports large drifts, and in this session we only drifted 3 times, so there's not many statistics on that table. And this, as I mentioned earlier, we developed this environmental monitoring system, and this has been very useful for diagnosing problems during the data collection. So here we have the ambient air of the microscope room, the temperature of the cooling pipes going, that's the out, and that's the temperature of the water going in. And believe it or not, this is pretty good, a pretty good session. There are some sessions where we see perhaps there's a blockage in the water flowing into the microscope, and so the temperature starts shooting up. Now, you wouldn't know what's going on if you're running the microscope without knowing this, and suddenly your image shifts would start going off, and your beam shifts would start going off, and remember back in a few slides ago I said that sometimes it would take as many as 5 hours to set up Legendon. And what we found out is that many of those times when it took so long to set up, it's because something was going wrong with the temperature of the microscope. So it's a very useful tool. And once again, we do histograms of the data. So another database report is the statistics on the actual images that are acquired. So here's, let's see, where's a good one? Okay, this is the mean of our near-to-focus images over time. So you see there's a clear downward trend. So that could indicate one of two things. Maybe the ice is being contaminated, so over time the mean image intensity gets lower. Or what actually we found out is the mean intensity of the beam changes over time. So that's what we think is going on there. So once again, we can use these database reports to diagnose things about our data collection. We also record an estimated ice thickness while we're collecting data with Legendon, and here's the report on ice thickness. This is a histogram of all the holes identified in a square and the ice thickness for those holes. And so you see there's a pretty good-looking distribution. And this peak here corresponds to empty holes. This is filled holes with ice. And then this tails off to ever thicker and thicker ice. And here is a report for the mean pixel value for our near-to-focus exposure versus our whole exposure. And you see there's a trend there, and that just indicates that the ice value we measure at the whole level is valid at the exposure level. So then we can develop queries where we say, okay, take a subset of my data that has a certain range of ice thickness at this whole level, and that will be valid at the exposure level. We also record comments that the users make during the data acquisition. So since we don't have one of these nice Polaris, we have to fill the nitrogen dewar every 2 hours on the stage. So we record that when we fill the dewars. Change to focus, right? So all these things are recorded. Okay, so that's just an idea of some of the things that are recorded in the database. There's actually many more things. But what the database looks like and how you can use it understand what's going on during your data acquisition. But the bottom line is, how do all these parameters affect the reconstruction that we're going to do? Another way to say that is, how can we sort this data in such a way that we focus only on good data, good particles? So you can imagine we can do all sorts of things. We can sort by ice thickness, sort by some sort of ACE criteria, sort by drift, sort by temperature, or whatever you can imagine. And we haven't come up with all the things you can imagine yet. But what I chose to do for this GROW-EL data set was to sort all the data by ice thickness. And so here's my scheme. We throw away any micrograph with an ACE confidence value that's less than 0.8, so it's a 0 to 1 value. And I had previously manually verified that all fits with a value greater than 0.8 are correct. And that seems to be generally true for all our sessions. In this case, we keep 2/3 of the data, throw 1/3 away. So we take the defocus measurements from ACE and sort the micrographs into small, medium, and large defocus sets, and then sort these defocus sets such that we split them into 10 substrates by increasing ice thickness. Then combine the defocus sets again, and find the set with the least particles and randomly remove particles from all the other sets until they all have the same number of particles. Now this is getting confusing, but the result is 10 sets of data, 10 sets of particles, with equivalent range of defoci that cover the whole spectrum, and that are increasing in ice thickness. Everybody with me? Then we reconstruct each data set using EMAN and calculate the resolution. And there's a clear upward trend. So in our thinnest data set, we have the highest resolution. And the thickest data set, we have, it's not the lowest, but there's a trend upwards. So this says, in general, this is a good technique. We can use this to sort our data and get some subset of particles that have a particular ice thickness and get a good reconstruction. So here's the FSC curve of the highest resolution structure, and the resolution is about 9.3 angstroms. Here's what the structure looks like. So this is a thinnest ice structure. I didn't use amplitude correction during the reconstructions, so post-reconstruction, I amplitude corrected the volume using the SPIDER method. Yes? When it's converged, is that what you mean?
Yeah, I mean, so you got the thick ice data and you got the thin ice data, and let's just say it converges a lot faster with the thin ice than with the thick ice. How do you know when you're actually stopping? Are you stopping at the same point?
In each of these data sets, we've run the refinement exactly the same. We've run for many rounds, and then EMAN has this nice utility where you calculate FSC curves from one iteration of the refinement to the next. And in practice, when the FSCs level off, you feel fairly confident that the refinement has converged, and that is true in this case. So that's how I decided that the refinements were finished. Well, they were all this. It was all a fixed number, but they did go to completion. Oh, and I should mention, this is still fairly thin ice. You know, we set out to collect good data, right? And then we found that this plot actually works, and so it would have been interesting to collect bad data too. So even thicker ice, and so. It's absorbance, so some mean pixel intensity of a whole.
Calibrate that somehow?
Yeah, we calibrate the intensity of the beam.
So, I mean, you calibrate it into ice
Yes, that's something that we're working on. That's the estimate.
If it's one, so 22.
Right, I said 250 angstroms.
Yeah.
On the thin end of that scale.
Yeah.
But that's barely the size of Brewery L. You think
right.
That's really true? Okay.
Well, I mean, you know, within a slop factor, right? So it at least says that ice is thicker than Brewery L at our thinnest ice. Sure.
And then you could get some kind of pseudo good resolution because you get all kinds of artifacts there.
But you would assume that then the structure would be distorted in some way because, you know, it's being exposed to beam, it's being fried, and the structure is actually good. This is Brewery L. Yes. Yeah, we actually saw that on Friday in our Legend on Practical. In the thinnest ice, there are some regions where the TMV was sort of thickening the ice in spots, and all the Brewery L were packed up against it. So that's a good point. Yes. Yes, Steve, I know, sees mostly side views. In our hands, it distributes fairly evenly across the unit sphere.
For different thickness
of
the ice.
Ah, that's I haven't done that. No, that would be interesting. Okay, so. As I said, these were not amplitude corrected during refinement. So the next step we thought we would try is to do the sort of canonical, run Eman in sort of the canonical way and do amplitude correction during the refinement. And we use the CTF parameters calculated for ACE in this case. So the same sort of sorting scheme, but we used ACEMAN to estimate the noise in the envelope, but the original ACE estimation for defocus. So the CTF of all the particles is equivalent to the previous round. Then, you know, do all our sorting, do our reconstructions. And we've only really finished one of these reconstructions so far. And here's the FSC of the thinnest ice structure. And you can see, and I'm sure Pavel would point out, that this FSC is not quite healthy. It doesn't go down to zero. And in fact, the resolution is 6.5, which is a little too close to Nyquist for comfort. But the structure is actually quite good. So the FSC at 0.5 reports this as a 6.5 angstrom structure. And in fact, we do see sausage-shaped regions of density. And so I've done fitting of the Brewery L crystal structure into this structure. And all the sausage-shaped regions actually do correspond to helices. So we feel this is a good structure. So the question is, well, can we get to even higher resolution by doing things like refining the data set with all 280,000 particles? Or another thing we can do, since that's sort of hard, is to average volumes from multiple reconstructions, or, you know, average all the volumes from the different ice thicknesses. There's, of course, a question about what do we do about amplitudes and what is the resolution. But what I've done is to take all the volumes from the different ice, the different sets of particles with increasing ice thickness, and average them all together. And this is the volume, and again, amplitude corrected this with SPIDER. And you see this is a very nice looking structure. We see these sausage-shaped regions of density. These the regions here correspond to a stack of helices. It looks really nice. And if we took the contour down even further, you could see that these resolve into individual cylinders of density. Oh, and I was going to show you a movie to try to convince you of the goodness of the fit.
How many volumes?
This is 10 volumes averaged together.
Did you do a
variance
map?
A variance map? No, I haven't. That's a good idea, though. This match the try to match the amplitudes of the volume to the amplitude to the structure factor, do that at the volume. Yeah, that's
and
then low pass filter it at the end. Yeah. Of course. What is the resolution of this reconstruction? And in this case, we can't really split the particles into two data sets and do independent reconstructions on them. But what I did was to take the even volumes of the set of 10, and average those together, and the odd volumes of the set of 10, so five volumes each, and average those together and take the FSC of those structures. And this is the FSC curve, and the 0.5 criteria would end up with a resolution of 10.2. Of course, we think the resolution is better than that because we can see helices. So we can probably go with a less conservative estimate for on the FSC. So the resolution is probably around 7 or 8. And here's just to compare the two volumes that calculated in different ways. This is the one where the amplitude was corrected during the refinement, and it's supposed to be around 6.5 angstroms. And it compares very nicely with our 10.2, 7 to 8 angstrom structure.
The one on the left was just done from one out of the 10 groups, right?
That's correct. So that's the pipeline in action. And, you know, as Clint told you about in his first lecture, the goal here, the idea is you put your specimen in, press go, 24 hours or however long later, you get a reconstruction. And we're not quite there yet. But for the practical on Friday, the Legenon automation practical, we collected a fair amount of data on these grids that have TMV, these little rods, rotavirus, and GrowEL. And in the time since that, we've picked all the particles, estimated the defocus, estimated the CTF, and actually done the reconstructions.
This is in our spare time.
In the spare time while, you know, during the course. And we actually get some very nice reconstructions in a fairly short, three reconstructions in a very short period of time. Rotavirus from about 200 particles at 30 angstroms, TMV from 40 filaments. 40 filaments at about 10 angstroms, and GrowEL from about 20,000 particles at 8.7 angstroms.
This is while people are going in and out of the microscope.
And we're lecturing about the different aspects of Legenon and so forth. So this was a really nice thing to be to show that the pipeline actually does work, and it works in a very reasonable amount of time. So finally, I just want to acknowledge all the people responsible. So you already know about the Legenon people and the ACE people. Selexon was written by Yunxin Zhu and Alan Roseman. And the last-minute reconstructions were done with the help of Gabe Lander, Kelly Dryden, and Bridget did the TMV. So thanks. This. Right. Well, these are independent reconstructions. So, as has been lectured about during the course, the resolution when you take one set of particles and refine them, and then after you've done refining them and split them in two, and calculate the volumes that way, the FSC should be that's a measure of the self-consistency of that particular data set. So the resolution will be a little higher than if you calculate the volumes from independent data sets.
Can I comment?
Please do.
One big difference is that when you do the full amplitude correction, I mean, this is an ENET specific thing. When you do the full amplitude correction, you're not just doing amplitude correction, but it's also incorporating signal to noise ratio weight
sure.
in various parts of the reconstruction process, and it will actually give you a much better reconstruction. So if you don't do that, include those amplitude weights in the reconstruction, you see each reconstruction it is worse. And I that's a great point because it demonstrates that fact.
But it's interesting that the thinnest ice without amplitude correction, the thinnest ice structure was 9.3 angstroms, the structure calculated from an average of volumes has lower resolution by the FSC method.
I was just saying, if you do the amplitude correction on each of the 10 and then average those 10 together, I think you're going to see a much much better structure.
Okay. That's in the works, and that will be an interesting thing to look at. Yes.
Well, the structure looks quite good. I mean, it might say 10.2, but it looks, to my eye, as good as the thing that says 6.5. I mean, stop spending more time doing this, but I think what it means is that the definition of resolution from these FSC curves is a little bit arbitrary, and we all know that because it's a curve, it's not a single point. But I mean, in the end, what matters is what the structure looks like, and the structure from the 10 volumes.
Right. So you had a question?
Yes, concerning the fitting of atomic data into the GROW-EL EMF, which you can see here.
Yes.
Was it a rigid body docking?
It was a rigid body fitting.
You think it was no need to perform flexible fitting, for instance?
I think that would be a very interesting thing to do on this data set. There's regions that do stick out of the density.
How would you like to do it? Which strategy?
Well, all of them, and see which does the best. I think that's the best answer.
And I think you'll hear about some options on that tomorrow.
Yes, Joachim.
I got confused when you were talking about ASIN and then about ASIN.
Yes. Yes.
And I suppose then you look at the power spectra of individual particles.
Then average of
individual. Oh, it's average over a number of particles that are in the same region?
In the same micrograph.
Oh, it's the same micrograph.
But you remember, our micrographs aren't that big compared to a film. The particles are all within a relatively small region. No, I think Sasha has tried it on single particles, in individual particles, and there's just not enough signal. So you have to average.
That's your experience
as well? Yeah. But with really big particles, like viruses, I think it may be able to...
When Jane,
it's interesting. We'd like to try to characterize that even further. Because I know there's certain. We've taken data where you can actually see zeros on the Fourier transform of a virus. So.
So the question is, can you see them well enough to get a better value for the focus than?
Ah, right. Than an average.
Right. I mean, yeah. You can see a couple of zeros.
Right.
But you still have a big uncertainty.
Sure. Yes.
Just to know about the cells, is there that I guess you can get terms of wisdom of the good way to collect data? Is it possible to trace when you've got a 3D reconstruction to trace back the best particles and try to figure out if there is something else that has to exist?
That's a great question, and that's something we're trying to implement. But you know, the difficulty is that with that is we have to use, you know, we're not developing the refinement software, so we have to implement the refinement software. So it takes the results and puts that into the database. So you know, that's something we're working on, but it's not done yet. Yes.
Will the dynamic reconstruction process be stored in the database? See that if we use the Lambda in our own system, and then we want to add that part into the database, how does that work? Is it easy to do or whatever?
Well, you have to have some knowledge of MySQL to be able to use the database. But if you have that knowledge, then it's the setup is the database will expand to fit whatever you want to put in it. So are you shaking your head, Bridget?
No, I'm agreeing.
Okay. So yes, if you know, if there's some parameters from your reconstruction with whatever package that you would like to have put into the database, as long as you could manipulate the MySQL so it would suck up your data and stick it into the database, then yes, that's possible.
Denny has written a whole series of something tools to allow you to go from Python directly into SQL and the data just translate to Python structures into the database so that you don't have to have a database manager, you just have to have a Python program. And those are distributed as part of the database.
No more questions about this talk? Are there any questions about any other talk, since we have a little bit of time?
We always
find. I have a question. I talked about the automation with negative stain grids. Is there something in the works for computer science as well? Like robotic loading of grids? Or is that something?
I can comment on that if you like, because we get asked that all the time. And the reason is no, because it's not a bottleneck for asking. I mean, when you're looking at 200 negative stain grids, getting into the scope is a main bottleneck. Because you spend half an hour looking at it, and then you have to get called, you know, the operator said, please come in and put a new grid in. So, you know, when you're doing screens like that, it would be terrible. For an ice grid, although it may annoy you sometimes, you know, you have to switch a few grids. Once it's in, it's there for 36 hours and you're imaging on it. So, you know, to develop the robotic handling for that didn't make sense to us. It was too much effort to save somebody 2 hours of work. And in any case, I think the microscopy companies are now using these cartridge systems where you can light up 12 grids at a time or whatever, and I think they'll take care of that for us. I think you could develop a robotic system, but would it be worth it? There's not really a bottleneck.
Okay, if you have any other questions that you'd like to write down and hand to me, there is a panel this afternoon, and I can read out your question anonymously there, or anything you want to add about Vincennes.
One of the questions is probably, what's Vincennes' room number?
Okay, thanks again.
Thank you.